Brian McCarthy is the Chief Revenue Officer of ThoughtSpot, and he very often speaks about love and care in public, in company all hands, in quarterly business reviews, in customer meetings. I wanted to speak to him and understand why he does that and how that helps him become one of the best talent hoarder that I've ever encountered in this business. Let me take you back to 2018. August 2018 is when I started with ThoughtSpot, and we were recruiting Brian to join us. And as part of the interview process, we asked him to send us a list of people that we could speak with who could follow him. You know, one of the best qualities that I always look for when we recruit leaders is, will they be able to hire fast? Good people. Are there people who are willing to follow him or her based on their past experiences? And he sent a list of 50 people. My first thought was, there is no way that anyone could send a list of 50 and make it reliable and make it believable. So I decided to pick like random people from the list and reach out and say, see if they will be willing to do that, to follow Brian to an unknown company, a company that they probably haven't heard of. To my surprise, every single person that I reached out to check on Brian, not only sort of said great things about Brian, but they were asking, is it possible for them to join the company? It was unusual. I mean, I always have pretty good success when it comes to recruiting and people following, but I haven't had a list of 50 people ready to join. And it's not just any people. There are people who moved from US to UK because Brian asked him to do that, like Spencer, who left New Jersey to London to run our EMEA operations. Or another person who left a company that was about to go public 9 months in, which means he didn't even vest the whole shares for 1 year in that company that was about to go public. People are willing to make unusual sacrifices to be part of Brian's team. That needed some exploration. That needed some investigation. So I spoke to Brian about his philosophy of building teams. And somewhat to my surprise, his conversation started with love. I've always found that the most complicated things usually have the simplest foundations. Brian's success when it comes to building world-class team almost always starts with the conversation around love. I resisted the temptation to ask Brian what is love, because I don't want to remind him of the Saturday night skit. But I did want to ask him, what kind of love is he talking about and why is it relevant in the world of business?
There's different kinds of love. Agape love, the romantic love. The love that I talk about is benevolent love. It is to will the best for someone, to desire the betterment of them, is what I mean by love. I certainly don't mean romance. I don't mean even fatherly or motherly love. I mean fraternal love in some aspects, but I mostly mean the self-gift of love of benevolence. When I say I love people, it's not dependent upon anything that person does for me. A benevolent love is a love of pure self-gift, meaning because I choose to love, because I choose that person's good. And that might sound crazy. Maybe that's my philosophy and theology background coming out. When I speak about love, that's what it's rooted in. It's rooted in that I really do want what is best for the team. And so I repeat it often because I mean it.
One of the biggest lessons I learned when I came to US for the first time is that when people ask you, how are you? That's not necessarily a way to really understand exactly how you're doing. It's more of a way of saying hi. In that same vein, I wanted to ask Brian, when you keep repeating I love you at work, how do you make it believable? How can people trust that you really care about them?
Because it's benevolent love. What I really have to focus on is myself and my own disposition. Do I really want what is better for the other? Can I really put my own self second to will the betterment of somebody else? I can make an intentional decision to make it accurate to love somebody, even if that other person doesn't merit that love. And so as far as making sure it's sincere, it comes with habitual discipline of trying to control your own selfishness. That might be a first that you've ever heard it explain love explained that way, but that's where it comes from.
I have been on many quarterly business reviews and forecast calls where Brian is leading. Let me tell you, he's really hard on his people. He doesn't cut any slacks. He has very tough conversations with them. So there is this idea that on one hand, he's comfortable speaking about love and care, but on the other hand, he's also very good at holding people accountable. So I've asked him about how do you balance this? Is this the idea that you talk about love so much, is that a hindrance when it comes to extracting the best out of people? His answer is that it's not only not a hindrance, in fact, it is an extremely important part in how he manages to get the best from people.
Before somebody sees it proved out in action, before it's believable, I think that's where I get some skepticism, where people have said to me, yeah, do you really mean it? In fact, I remember one time in particular, there was a leader at AppDynamics, a really good guy who I liked a lot. He asked me that question. Do you really, when you talk about love and creating this environment of love, and it's like familial like environment, do you really mean it? And if you do, like, how do you actually create a culture and environment where you can give people real advice or guidance or hold them accountable? If, if you have this love affair, for lack of a better word, with your team. It was a good question. And my answer then was, the love actually makes the giving of the hard, difficult conversations easy. And what I mean by that is, it's about the other person's receptiveness to receiving tough conversations. Tough conversations are always awkward, but if you're delivering it in a spirit of, and you really mean it, in a spirit of not in criticism, but out of empathy that you want the best for that person and you care about them, you care about their hopes and their dreams and their goals. And so you're going to speak into their life in a way that can help them move forward, be more successful, help them overcome obstacles and barriers to their own success. It starts with them believing that foundation that you care about them. And it's amazing the difference. You can give the same feedback, but if somebody doesn't believe that it's coming from a spirit of love or a spirit in which they actually care, that person that's talking to me cares about my betterment, they're not in a position to receive the coaching. They're not in a position to receive that feedback. They're naturally skeptical as to, where is this coming from? Is this person trying to wound me? Is this person trying to hurt me? When you flip it around and you set a foundation in which the team, as its first things first, as a foundation, assumes this person cares about me, it's so much easier to communicate effective coaching. That person then soaks it up. It might not always be easy to hear, but they know that it's coming from a place of good, a place of caring, and they're willing to listen because they've gotten over the skepticism of why, where is this coming from, and why is this person speaking this to me? So I guess to answer the question, I don't get a lot of skepticism around it after a period of time. But up front, I think until it's proved out that with action, people wonder, is it possible to really care selflessly about the team that way?
Hiring and firing are two sides of the same coin when it comes to business building, team building. 2019 was a year of rebuilding for us. In the go-to-market organization, more than 90% of the team were churned over. Not because the people we had were bad, it's that the company was moving in a different direction, focusing on Global 2000, and we need to rebuild the sales and marketing teams to match that. So when you think about that, there are two difficult things to do. Number one, you have to have these difficult conversations with people about how they are no longer going to be part of ThoughtSpot's forward journey. You will have angry, unhappy, sad people that you have to deal with. And then on the other hand, you also have to go recruit, because while we were rebuilding 90% of the organization, we also had an ambitious goal of growing the business almost 100% year over year. That is a difficult thing to do. Speaking with Brian, looking back at 2019, he explains why understanding people and emotions and then speaking to those emotions helps him do both sides of it really well. Not only that we grew our business 100%, we also became one of the best companies to work for based on Glassdoor reviews by the employees, which means the people who are with the company and the people who were with the company. Pulling that off is something that I really admire in how he did it.
I got 5 kids, and there's certainly times in which we have to outline rules to live by in the home. If you can't live by within this framework, then I will always love you and care for you, but I can't have you in the home disrupting the harmony of the other children, because it's not for the greater good, for the betterment of everybody. And just like that, in a family situation, when you have to have that difficult conversation, maybe with somebody, and thank God, I want to be very clear, thank God that hasn't been my situation with my kids. I've been like crazy blessed with my children. But I know of families that have had to, you know, whether it's through drug addiction or abuse of different kinds, where you have to say, hey, look, this person is actually stealing the harmony from the rest of the family. And as a result, I have to ask them to leave the home, or else I can't properly protect the rest. Just because we have to ask them to leave doesn't mean that we don't care for them. That doesn't mean that we don't want and desire and love them and want them their betterment. But they have to participate in their own rescue. And I can actually flip that into the work world, and I think it's not too dissimilar, right?
A lot of people leaders I know struggle with firing. You know, it's a bad word. It's not a happy conversation topic for anyone. Definitely not for the person affected, and not for the manager who needs to fire somebody. But it is a necessary thing when it comes to business building. And I wanted to dig a little deeper with Brian on how he approaches the conversations around departure of people, voluntary and involuntary.
There's two different ways when you have to have part ways with employees. One, when somebody refuses to do what is asked for them and they become a disruption, they become a cancer, for lack of a better term, not to belittle what cancer is, but to, you know, they become something that eats away at the rest of the team's harmony, the rest of the team's ability to execute at a high level, then in loving the team, that you ask that person to leave the business, because that person is preventing everybody from operating at their peak performance. And that doesn't happen without having honest conversations, expectations, open and straightforward. And then that person makes a clear, conscious decision to reject what is asked of them. Because of that, we ask that person to leave. And even then, in those situations, those people left on good terms with me. And we continue to connect and keep in touch. And I wanted their betterment. But there was at least a level of respect, knowing that they chose or not participate in what we asked of them. Because I was honest and open and straightforward in that communication and consistent, that person never left confused. They always knew why that firing was taking place. It was very clear. And they could live with that. And it was as much their decision to reject, whether it was activities, tasks, culture that we had asked of them. The second, and far more common, is challenges around skill, challenges around delivering on expectations, on targets, based around not having the capability or the skill or the wrong fit for the job. This is a shared failure. And I think coming at it as a shared failure has allowed these attritions or these firings to be really healthy breakups, so to speak. And what I mean by shared failure is acknowledging that somewhere along the way, we fouled you. We fouled you in either A, we didn't evaluate your skill set properly for the job that we asked you to do. And that is on us. And that conversation goes a bit different. Look, I want you to be successful. I think if we take an honest look at what it takes to be successful in this role, those skill sets don't align to you most perfectly. And I want to be clear, that doesn't mean you're not capable of being successful. What it means is, as of now, you're not capable of being successful in this role under this context. There's a long list of people that I've went out of my way to try to help them transition into roles that were better fit for them, both whether it's in the company or even outside the company, finding roles that fit their skill set better, that they were able to go on and thrive. And so I don't think those conversations are, steal from a family culture.
Like I said in the beginning, people love following Brian wherever he's going. And it is definitely not because he's an easy guy to work for. He pushes his people. He expects the best out of everyone that he hires. So I asked him, can you explain why people follow you?
What I believe is behind that is three things. One, people want to know they're believed in, they're cared for, and somebody has their back. And I'll just give you a quick example of what I mean by that. Nobody has ever had to ask me, hey, did you max out compensation package for me? Ever. When I recruit people, especially people that I know and have worked for, we don't haggle around OTE, comp, equity, any of that. They know that what I bring to them is what I would fight for myself, and I would max it out every time. Because when it comes time for reviews, they know that in my head, I'm thinking about them. I'm thinking about their families. And that's a stress reliever for people in work, that they know that somebody is doing the looking out for them. One of the reasons why I've had a good track record of not only recruiting well, but recruiting people and the best people that I've worked with that have wanted to do it again, is because working together has been an experience in which they've grown professionally and personally. And I have, from that relationship with them. Hence the reason why I want to be around them. And creating that kind of relationship, which we challenge each other and we grow. We learn from each other, and so I think that's super important as well. And then ultimately, look, you could create this fairy tale culture all you want, Sadish. You can create a culture in which everybody loves each other, they sing kumbaya all the time, they feel developed, they have each other's back, they don't have to look over their shoulder all the time wondering if there's people talking about them, you can create that culture where that's beautiful and perfect. But if they're not going to make money, it only lasts so long because people have families to take care of. They have and financial goals and needs in their life. And so the other area, I've been very blessed and fortunate to be in situations where we've made a lot of money together at places. And I think people are pretty confident when we go to work together that we're gonna work in an environment where we can be really successful and share in financial reward. To me, that's why recruiting has come, I guess, I don't want to say easy, but easier. It's authentic. It's not made up. I think people want to be part of that culture and part of that opportunity.
You know, one of the things that people always talk about is like hire people who are better than you. Every business book talks about it. Every leader who gives a talk about leadership will speak about how it is important to hire people who are better than you. You know, B players hire C players, A players hire A plus players. It's an easy thing to say, but a very difficult thing to live by. It comes natural to Brian, so I asked him, what's his philosophy? How is it that he's able to recruit people who are significantly better than him?
I remember being as a kid, Sadish. I came from a big family. I'm the 10th of 12 children. 7 boys, 5 girls. We didn't have much. You know, a very, very blue-collar family. And I remember my brother, Sean, who was a boxer, a fighter, and we all boxed a bit growing up. I remember in sports, he would always get angry with me whenever I would admire someone else's greatness. If we were playing basketball, I said, oh man, isn't that kid awesome? He would always say, you're awesome. Why do you care about what that kid's awesome? I never got that mentality. It was natural. It's innate in me. Like, I love greatness. I love seeing other people be great. I don't know where it came from. The only place I can point to now in retrospect is, I think, security. I'm very secure. I don't say that in false humility. I say that in the reality. And the reason for that security is I know I'm very loved. My mom loved the heck out of me. My brothers and sisters loved me growing up. I was born and surrounded in an environment of encouragement where people I felt like thought I was good enough, that I measured up. And because of that, having that spirit of security allowed me not to fall into that comparison game where, you know, comparison is the thief of joy. You've heard me say before, where it's like, I can be confident in myself until I look over and see somebody has something that I don't, and then I'm not so confident. That was never my issue. I always looked around and celebrated other people for what they were great at, and always felt like I had a really good command of what I was good at and what I was blessed, and felt grateful for my gifts, and never really kind of looked around thinking, man, because that person's great, I'm less. So I can't necessarily say it was something that I grew into or learned behavior. For me, as long as I can remember, I have not had a problem wanting to be surrounded by people that were better than me. My favorite position in basketball was point guard. And it was because I loved to get everybody else involved in the game. I loved to be the distributor of the ball. And I loved to see other people score, see other people excel. And I felt like I was part of that, you know, on the basketball court. And I feel that way, you know, building and leading companies too.
I often repeat that the worst kind of people leaders to work for are driven by ego and insecurity. Brian believes that love is an antidote to insecurity. That is, he believes that he has worked with people with insecurity and cured them of their insecurity through love.
I think most people struggle with that insecurity in one way or another. My experience is the best way to develop security is to give love. My experience professionally, and I've seen this happen, Sadish, I've seen this happen. People in some organizations that are highly skilled but are insecure, I've had great success in assuring those people and seeing them grow in security, and some of the challenges that come with insecurity, I've seen them fall off like scabs on an open wound, right? When that person is loved, when that person is cared for, when that person feels like, okay, I don't have to try to pretend or try to measure up or try to earn it. This person has given me respect and has made it okay that I don't have to be the best at everything. But what I am great at is acknowledged and affirmed, and it's good enough.
But love alone won't do it. He talks about authenticity and vulnerability as part of making this difficult job a bit easier. That is, having leaders understand where their insecurities are coming from and manage them. It's a very important and extremely intelligent point I think we all should heed too.
One other thing on that is being willing to be authentic and vulnerable with your own shortcomings. You acknowledging openly that I'm not the best at everything, but also not falsely, not like being false, you know, the faux humility that we see at time to time that flies around Silicon Valley and all kinds of places. Acknowledging that I am great at some things. And it's actually that juxtaposition that makes it real for people, that you're able to say, hey, I'm great at this. I have no problem admitting I'm not great at this. This is not my gift, but I see that gift in you. And you're great at it. That vulnerability and acknowledging, you know, shortcomings empowers people. It makes them feel like it's okay not to be perfect, and that you're best when you know what you're good at, and you excel at it. And you know, you try to fill the holes of what you're not good at, you know, best you can. But don't try to fake it. You know, be authentic. Be who you are.
Sometimes the word family is overused in the world of business, and I have my own reservations against it, because family is a very special word. In the idea is that you are going to have each other's back, but the reality is when it comes to work, it is a professional relationship. It's a two-way contract that we write with each other. I want to assure you that because he speaks about love and care and family doesn't mean it is a kumbaya. It is an extremely aggressive organization that he's leading. They don't like to lose. They take every slight from the competitor to their heart and use it to motivate themselves to win even more. I asked Brian to explain how is he able to walk that fine balance of togetherness, family, and at the same time be this extremely aggressive and nasty organization that charges ahead constantly, never sleeps, always on fire. How is that possible?
The sense that to be loving, to be caring, doesn't mean that we're weak. It doesn't mean that you're soft. It doesn't mean you can't have great expectations and be extremely demanding. They're not mutually exclusive. Loving and caring about people, having real empathy, understanding where they're coming from, walking in their shoes, being aware of what's going on in their life, caring about their betterment, caring about their goals, goes hand in hand with holding them accountable, setting, you know, great goals, creating a high caliber team that is driven, that wants to be great and feels supported in getting there. Those things go hand in hand.
If you've listened to me this far, I think you probably reached the same conclusion as I did, that Brian has a bright future obviously ahead, not just in the world of business, but maybe even as a preacher. He's a charismatic speaker. He speaks from his heart. He's unafraid to explain every emotions that he's feeling. At the same time, he's focused enough to execute on clearly delivered goals that are relevant for a business. So that rare combination allows him to do whatever the hell he wants to do in future. I asked Brian what he would like to do if and when he decides to move on from the world of technology and business. It could be in the next 30 years or 40 years, who knows? Here is his answer.
I'm on the board for a non-for-profit called Vagabond Missions, which works for underserved inner city youth. And I have a heart for that. I have a heart for homelessness and those that are struggling in poverty and wanting to serve them and care for them. I've dreamed about coaching high school basketball, being present in young people's lives and helping them to fill the gaps where they're insecure, letting them know that they measure up, they're worthwhile, somebody cares about them, and helping them build that self-esteem and security that's the world so much lacks.
There is nothing more important than finding the best possible people, hiring them, inspiring them, leading them, and retaining them in this highly competitive industry that we are all operating in. I hope that this conversation gave you a few insights or ideas that you haven't considered before. And if you did, I'll be happy. Thank you for listening. If you do like this, please subscribe and give me some feedback. I appreciate it. Thank you.